Today on Straight Talk Africa, what is the socio-economic effect of climate change in Africa? That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Sheka Sali, and today we are discussing how climate change in Africa and exploring few efforts to offset its effects. Africa is especially vulnerable to climate change. Flooding and drought continually plague certain regions. VOA's Lisa Bryant reports on three young Africans who are making a difference.
Lara Moaves works with local communities in Mozambique to ensure sustainable fishing practices, helping them to adapt to a changing climate.
I have a great passion for environment issue, mainly marine.
Mozambique is on the front lines of climate change, which is intensifying weather events. Cyclones in March and April left a trail of destruction. Hundreds of people died, many from disease after the cyclones. Among them, Lara's best friend and collaborator in the fisheries project.
Chris died from malaria. He was there in Ibu. That time he died, 4 to 8 people were dying, you know, like animals and people. Chris could not escape from the situation.
Several thousand kilometers north in Nigeria, Mahmoud Maishanu is looking for what he calls climate smart solutions for sectors like agriculture, the backbone of Africa's economy.
In my own hometown, not far from where my grandparents are, there's a whole lot of drought and desertification.
He says many Nigerians aren't fully aware of the impact of climate change. Young people are changing that.
I'm seeing a more determining generation. I'm seeing a more determining youths taking action, doing what the previous generation hasn't done for its future generation.
One of those youths is French-Moroccan climate activist Ayou Makhloufi. He's created a green-friendly torch, sort of like the Olympic one. Today, it travels to each yearly climate meeting.
This year, we traveled from Katowice in Poland to Belém in Brazil by electric car, train, and sailboat.
Makhloufi wants to help find financing for African environmental projects and build climate awareness in schools. He sees the challenges in his parents, native Morocco.
Lack of water, lack of education, especially in terms of sustainable development.
But he remains optimistic the world will find solutions to climate change. The challenge is finding the right ones so everyone can benefit. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Madrid.
Thanks, Lisa, for that report. Joining us today here in Washington is our distinguished guest, Joseph Masembe, the chief executive officer of the Ugandan-based civil society organization, Little Green Hands. Well, I have to say, Joseph, that finally I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, the pleasure is mine to be in the presence of quite a distinguished general. I mean, I've grown up watching Straight Talk Africa, a little into the politics, and I'm glad today to be seated next to you discussing something that is a lot closer to me.
Any particular reason that you referred to me, the host, as a general? The last time I checked, I happened to be eminently underqualified to be a general.
Well, generals are generals because of the position they hold in society. And I think after 20 years of marshalling the industry of media, talking to presidents and prime ministers and everybody that is important in Africa, you rightly qualify to be a general. And I think those peeps should be coming very time soon.
Profoundly honored for your compliments and support.
Thank you.
You know, it's a very long time since we last talking about the possibility of hosting you and talking about this most important subject.
Yes.
Climate change.
Yes.
How does it feel for you now that you and I are in the studio in Washington and we are talking about this very important subject which happens to be near and dear to your heart?
Interestingly so, it's a mixture of emotions here and there, because very many times across the world, when we are watching Straight Talk Africa, we're thinking politics. We're thinking politics, current affairs and politics. But climate change now seems to have overtaken that space, at least for today anyway, because we are grappling with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
As humanity is at the crossroads, mm-hmm. we see locusts coming all the way from Yemen into East Africa. We see floods and hurricanes that used to happen every 100 years, now happening every so often, and we have gotten so comfortable that we have started giving them names that we normally give to our children, Isaac, Katrina, and the like, which alone brings forward the point that the crisis is close at home, and the sooner we act on it, our children will have nothing to inherit tomorrow. So I am... I'm profoundly gratified to be here discussing climate change and how it is affecting the rest of Africa.
It's very interesting that you associate Straight Talk Africa with politics. didn't you know, for example, that one of the definitions of politics happens to be the art of all possibilities?
Wow. And you were denying that you're not a general.
Well, of course, the military also happens to be an aspect of politics.
Exactly.
Very interesting. Let's talk about this subject that is near and dear, not only to you and me, but to all of us as we talk. First of all, the last time I checked, you studied law.
Yes.
Not agriculture.
No, not agriculture, definitely not. I am I'm a lawyer by profession. I read law at Kingston University in London. And although I picked on environmental law as one of my fields of study, I ended up bouncing off into becoming an environmental activist, specifically working with children, because children have a proprietary interest in the future. And I keep telling this to so many of us. And we do not inherit this earth from our parents. We simply borrow it from our children. Now, if we do not take certain fundamental steps towards ensuring that the children that we give birth to, the children that will be future leaders of tomorrow, if we do not take fundamental steps to ensure that they will inherit one, a planet that is green and healthy, but secondly, that they can be able to maintain it in that way. And to be able to maintain it in that way, we need to teach that to them at a tender age. So that's how I jumped off from doing law to practicing environmental conservation education with special emphasis on the young children, because whatever we impart on them today, they will quickly own it when they grow up.
Very interesting. Is that the reason why your NGO is named Little Green Hands?
Yes. In certain aspects, we have morphed from Little Green Hands to Little Hands Go Green. And the ideology or the thinking behind it is very simple. When it was started, the dream scenario was if every child in Uganda, where we started, can plant and own just one fruit tree, and there is 20 million children in Uganda, then it means that at one point we'll have 20 million trees, which is an extra 20 million green footprint. But we said not Uganda alone. Mm-hmm. We moved to Rwanda and Kenya and tried to scale it up. But we also realized that being green is not just about planting trees. Mm. The world is grappling with so many other problems. We're trying to stop plastic pollution. So we added that on and said, you know what? Let's try and make sure that in our communities and our schools, we keep away from polythene bags. We are not yet that level developed to a level where we can say that we'll do to hell with single-use plastics. Mm. But we can try and limit certain uses of plastics and in our communities. So that's how we came up with that, and we have tried to grow it slowly by slowly. And the idea is to inculcate in our children at a tender age that growing up and taking care of the environment is their responsibility. And I've been across the world in conferences and workshops and singing the same gospel. So it's not just about Uganda. It's not Uganda's little ones go green. Kenya can have its little ones. Rwanda can. Gambia can. And I've been encouraging most of the people. Even I have friends from Extreme Rebellion who believe that it's going hard. And say, while you're going in hard, talk to the children. Get the children to own up to the culture of saying, it is now about me. It's about me, it's about my tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, I flew with Kenya Airways, and I must say, I was impressed with their approach towards how they look at the airline industry greening up society. Mm-hmm. I kept having a chat with the air hostess through the journey, and she kept saying, you know what, we have a carbon footprint, but more than anything, when children fly here, we make sure that we can encourage them to plant trees in the destinations that they go to. And that coming from an airline was something big. I must applaud them for that. Thank you.
It's interesting that you talk about growing trees.
Yes.
I had a friend by the name Professor Wangari Maathai.
Oh.
The lady that was world-renowned in terms of being an environmentalist. And of course, she won a Nobel Peace Prize around 2004 to boot.
Yes.
For her efforts.
Yes.
And she built many, many, many trees. Yes. In Kenya.
Yes.
The environment was near and dear to Wangari's heart.
Wangari Maathai is not just a Nobel Prize winner. She's not just Kenyan. She is the epitome of Wangari Maathai signifies the belief in private citizenry, because there is that general belief that saving the environment will come from UNEP, from I don't know which UN organizations, which development partners. Wangari Maathai showed the rest of the world, including myself, that a single individual can wake up in the morning, pick up something, believe in it, and make it work. Her Green Belt movement has been an inspiration to people across Africa and the rest of the world. The trees she planted today in Kenya have grown, and she's not there.
Mm.
And I think if we can borrow that, we can help to show that private citizens can make their little efforts. And I've told people every other day, if we can do it from an individual point of view, forget the government, forget the UN, forget all these other institutions. Just do it for you, your family, and those around you.
Mm.
And in your household, if you plant a tree, I remember I went to a school in 2015, I think it should have been February, and went to this school, picked a couple of kids and planted 50 fruit trees. So last year we went back with our team, and we're running around the school, just going to classes, just talking about environment.
Mm.
And we pointed some of the trees outside, a guava tree, a orange tree, avocado tree, and said, do you eat fruits from those trees? They said, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, we do. Mm. How old do you think those trees are? I said, I think about maybe 10 years or 15 or 20. And we told them, no. We planted these trees here. As little ones go green, literally almost 4 years ago. And they said, wow. So bringing that back to your Wangari Maathai, we can make our little efforts.
Mm.
And then government and development partners can come and tag along. Because the tree I plant in my house, in my home, in my compound, is mine and my children and their grandchildren and those that will come after them. And for us specifically, as Little Ones Go Green, we plant fruit trees. The symbolism of a fruit tree means that the fruits that come from that tree will be eaten by me, my grandchildren, their children, the neighbors, even the birds that just perch on the trees. So that is a direction. She's a legend.
How long have you been in this business?
Little Ones Go Green started in 2012, May 2012. And we have been soldiering on with very simple, humble strides and enjoying it. Because for us, the model is not just about planting trees. It is showing children that the environment can be fun and entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to create green festivals, almost like mini Disneys, mini fun fairs.
How often?
We do that about twice a year. And it is basically a fun fair element where children spend the entire school term taking care of the environment, doing recycling projects, avoiding littering, planting trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the holiday, the green ambassadors all gather at one amazing venue, and we are on the bouncing castles, we are modeling, we are swimming, we are jumping up and down, simply as a reward for taking care of the environment. Because all work without play will always make Jack a dull boy.
So
let us go and play, because we have planted the trees. There is a lot of deforestation happening on large scales and smaller scales. So what we do is, let's do our limited efforts, and because we are children, we go out, have fun, and play. And they seem to enjoy it amazingly.
What is your goal?
My goal, which is the goal of our organization, the goal of the Green Ambassadors, the goal of all the little children that join the Little Green Hands movement, is simply to create an environment that is worth living in. You have seen the air you breathe when there is green is different from the air you'll breathe when it is all concrete, stone, bricks, and metal. So the goal is a very simple one. Can we, as individuals, help our children to own up to the responsibility of taking of their care of the environment? How will they do that? If they can plant a tree, let them plant it. If they can recycle, let them do that. If they can avoid littering, let them do that. Let us create wholesome children. We call it at Little Green Hands meaningful child participation. Let us better the lives of our children by giving them certain small lessons. If you see the way we have fun and play and blossom, everybody likes a blossomed kid. So let's help them blossom by making sure that the environment they will live in tomorrow will be better for their children and their grandchildren.
Where do you get the funding to remain in that very important business?
And that now is the most interesting aspect. We created a model that touches on to the honesty of people.
Mm-hmm.
And because our original mission is to plant just one fruit tree, plant it, find it and plant it. However, we now have to knock on the doors of government. And government has seen some of the things we're doing, and they're impressed by them. In Uganda, partners and the National Forestry Authority, who will always give us fruit trees when they can, if they're on season, they give them to us, we can plant. In Rwanda, we spoke to REMA. REMA is also one of our partners.
Who is REMA?
REMA is the Rwanda Environment Management Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever we need some trees and they can be able to support, they support us.
We worked out an arrangement with NEMA in Kenya as well.
Mm.
So whenever we need trees, NEMA Kenya will also be able to give us trees. But beyond that, there's Rotary Clubs. They are private individuals. They are corporate companies. In Uganda, there's very many corporate companies partner with us, from giving us trees to supporting us with logistics to make sure that we can continue that amazing journey, because it touches on to their children. All these people have children.
So your efforts, in a sense, have really been overwhelmingly received.
Yes, they are. And not just because they're probably that good. It is because almost in every household there is a child. And we knock on the doors of these children in their schools and their homes, and they love the model we use.
Mm.
We're not telling them to go and read 1 million books and study the ecology of trees.
Mm.
We're just telling them, get it, put it on the in the ground, water it, and keep watching it. And once it starts growing, come, let's have some fun. It is exciting for them.
That's very interesting. I was looking at one of Africa's major surveys groups, and it is called Afrobarometer.
Yes.
And you get the sense in reading their reports, yes, their surveys,
yes,
that much of the continent seems to be illiterate when it comes to climate change. Is that what you see?
Actually, you're very right. And the reason is very simple. Africa is largely endowed. So there is a general belief that we are good, we are okay.
Mm.
Climate change is for the other guys. It doesn't come close to my doorstep. Because when I look around, I see a tree, I still have food.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there are delayed droughts, but it is there. And that is our biggest challenge.
But what about, for example, the changing rain patterns?
Now, here's what happens.
What about the floods?
Thank you. Climate change, by definition, happens over time, repeatedly over a couple of years. Africa, especially the tropical side of Africa, has not warmed up to the realization that all these changing weather patterns, the floods, all that is climate change. They will tell you the rains these days are not really that good. But it hasn't translated into it being climate change. And that is where we have a problem, because the education has to be at all levels and it has to be a constant.
What about drought?
By the time our people realize that drought is actually as a result of climate change, we will be long gone. I'll give you a close example that explains...
But why wouldn't they honestly understand it? Because if anything, it translates directly into food security or lack of it.
I think, and it's good you've mentioned that, I think one of our biggest challenges is the way we drive our communication. When I say we, I mean all stakeholders, from governments to civil society to all the different organizations responsible. Because what we are not telling our people,
mm-hmm,
is how bad the situation is, breaking it down to the understanding of the average common man. Every day throughout the year you hear there is COP21, COP22, COP23, 25, COP26 is happening in Glasgow. And when they come to Africa...
What is COP22, COP25?
COP22, 23, it's every year these big governments from across the world.
Conferences.
Yes, they do these conferences to kind of work out solutions for climate change and cutting out greenhouse gas emissions. And they come to Africa and they throw down those big words to us.
Mm-hmm.
Over the past 200 years of industrialization, Africa has only managed to contribute, I think, a little over 4% of the greenhouse gas emissions. That's our contribution.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep inviting all these dignitaries and ministers and everybody to come and discuss greenhouse gas emissions. Yet what they should in reality be telling people is that now you are agro-based
you are in a crisis, this is what you should do. The language we speak to our people should be one that works for them. That's why I will tell you, I've been doing environmentalism and activism for 7 years with our entire team. And what I've always told my team and what our guiding philosophy is, let's do what we can. Let's plant trees. That's why you see the children are excited, because that they will understand. I'm not going to feed them with greenhouse gas emissions, because that is beyond them. How much do we emit in Africa? There was supposed to be an Africa Climate Week happening in Uganda, and it was postponed because of the
coronavirus.
And in one of the discussions we were having was, in theming up this for Africa, can we let it speak to the African? Can we talk about how children and the youth are now, should be now the next drivers of our efforts? Can we center efforts around them? Can we look at nature-based solutions? Can we look at how we can revive our agriculture? How climate change is affecting us? Yes, we can also look at the global picture of emissions and all that. But for our African countries, the discussion needs to be closer to us. Across the board, people are talking, keep fossil fuels in the ground. Let's look for renewable energy, alternative renewable sources of energy. But East Africa has just discovered oil. They are hoping that right now, this will help our economies. We can make money, save our debts, pay, all these other things. But so you're not going to tell them that, you know what, forget the oil.
But unfortunately,
let's focus on solar.
Unfortunately, perhaps due to Corona,
yes,
the oil prices have in fact collapsed.
Yes, they have, and now that they have collapsed, maybe our reserves that are still in Uganda and I don't know, Kenya and Tanzania, in the future, whenever they come out, we'll have better pricing, which is a joke someone was cracking earlier on. But for me, I believe that if we can have a discussion around something that touches our people, President Museveni once came up with an idea of Operation Wealth Creation in Uganda. And the idea is that let every household try and become rich within the means that it has. If you have 1 acre of land, you're going to go and plant trees or maize or whatever it is, which in itself is a very good concept, if we can drive it successfully. Why would it be a good concept? Because it is speaking to the people. They do agriculture. So if I'm telling you, try and get rich from agriculture, that makes sense. So how do we beat climate change when every time I'm going for a conference, we are talking about greenhouse gas emissions to a multitude of Africans who are not even emitting greenhouse gases? So I think in tackling climate change and Africa, you've seen floods across the board.
You come from Uganda, and in fact, floods have really contributed to a lot of population displacements, especially in eastern part of Uganda.
Yes, which is now Bududa for long.
Bududa
for has had part. Issues.
Not very far from Bali.
Yes, not very far from Bali. Now, Bududa was traditionally the one that had landslides because of floods. Then recently there was Bundibugyo. Bundibugyo has also had its fair share of that, and devastatingly so. In Kenya as well, we saw what happened in Mozambique. This is not a scattered issue of Uganda or Kenya or Tanzania or Mozambique. It is across the board. Therefore, the solutions that we need to be talking about for Africa, by Africans, are supposed to be solutions that touch on that. Our biggest crisis now is food security. We're talking about those floods, what they are doing, not just to crop yields, but to displacement. What do they mean for immigration, migration and people moving and the refugee crisis, all the things are intertwined.
In the particular case of Uganda, what has the government of Uganda done for those people?
No, the government actually made a couple of steps. They resettled people in Bududa, I think the first section of people that were displaced. They built houses for them and they have resettled them, to the best of my knowledge, and at least I've seen that happening somewhere, which is a good step. But in case they happen every other time to so many other districts, where are we going to resettle? We should be thinking long term. And for me, in terms of thinking long term, first we start with our education.
tackling with the issues and the crisis that we believe is upon us and how people can better solve that crisis. So for me, that is my humble two cents.
Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally, and for that, you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Being part of Our Voices is about more than just sitting here and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure their voices are heard.
Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. Every week, connect with our experts. You can ask them your questions and get their advice. Join me, Lina Hormoudou, in Washington on Healthy Living, your new health program, right here on Voice of America.
We appreciate all of our audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 25 years ago, the international community convened in an attempt to create a world where men and women are equal. Has their vision been realized? A discussion on women's equality on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
And today we are talking about how climate change is affecting Africa. And our guest is Joseph Masembe, the Chief Executive Officer of the civil society organization Little Green Hands that is based in Uganda. Well, Mr. Masembe, I have to say again that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here once again.
Now, you're most welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Masembe, we're talking about climate change, but apparently there are a lot of people on the continent who actually think it is a hoax, that is not real.
The climate deniers will always exist. I think one of the countries that was big on denying climate change used to be Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Until the other day, when the bushfires hit them in abnormal proportions. And for a moment they started to think that, wait a second, maybe. So many years ago, the US itself was one of the countries that would never entertain a discussion when it comes to climate change. From the Kyoto Protocol, the Bali Conference, all these other things, they were very hesitant.
It is probably not the United States. It's probably some segments of
some
the United
segments
States
of
opinion.
The United States.
Yeah.
Stand corrected. Mm-hmm. But what happened then was that these 100-year hurricanes and hailstorms started to happen every 4 years.
Mm.
When they hit New York
mm.
and they shut down Wall Street for 4 days, I think,
mm.
the discussion tended to change. And it is very okay for people to deny certain things. It's okay, they're entitled to their own opinions. But let us look at what we have on the ground. What do we see?
What does science tell us?
What science tells us and what is the reality on the ground? If I have hurricanes every other couple of years, mm. today it is Isaac's, mm. John, Storm, Peter, Jen.
Mm.
That is one. Secondly, in Africa, the rains would come March to May, then October to December, which should be the season, for example, in Uganda. Now, those ones are very irregular. And even when they come, it is either hailstorms or the summer should be a lot hotter, which alone tells you that something somewhere is changing. And we can deny it for all we want. But if you look at the approach that we use at Little Ones Go Green, is whether you're denying or not, is it bad to pick a fruit tree and put it in the ground? No. So let's put it in. Is it bad to recycle our waste? No. So that's why I said the option now lies not with the conferences, the bureaucrats, people who are talking and sitting, and the DMs and all that. Let's put that aside. Let's look to the private citizen, the individual, the you and me. Let's do what ideally would be right. If I have a home and I can put one or two trees there, so much the better. The smarter people came up with the principle of carbon offsets. That if I'm polluting so much, I can decide to continue doing that, but then I would go to the Congo and I plant as many trees as I can. It has been said by some scientists and researchers that by 2030, the Congo forest, or the Africa's jungles in general, by the way, will only be able to offset 14% of the emissions. And if they keep depleting, by 2040, 2045, they will no longer be able, because the emissions keep growing, and then we keep cutting and losing our green cover across the world. So the balancing effect by 2030 can only take care of 14%. Beyond that, 2040, 2050, we'll be done. So whether we deny or not, let's do certain things that we do not break our backs over.
What about these locusts which have invaded the eastern part of the African continent, including where you come from, Uganda?
Now, you tell me how locusts come all the way from Yemen and they keep crossing country to country, country to country, and now they are in Africa, in the eastern part. Maybe they are just on some sort of safari rally or enjoying, you know, one of those joyrides. Maybe in Africa, but all the way from Yemen, crossing the sea, coming into Africa, should be a wake-up call to any human being.
As a matter of fact, the London-based, I mean, the Rome-based UN Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, its acronym, they say there is evidence that, in fact, that may very well be a reflection of climate change.
There you have it. I know we started talking about those so-called climate deniers, but even in the Bible, there was a king called King Nebuchadnezzar, and he called all his experts to interpret what was on the wall, and he later brought Daniel and said, no, this man is lying. The writing is on the wall as far as climate change is concerned. Deny it or not, whether we do deny it or not, it is coming. The biggest problem is that Africa will be worst hit, yet we are the ones who have done the least pollution. And that is where the problem is. From our children to our women, our communities, and Africa as a continent is on record.
It is pollution because it is not industrialized.
It is not industrialized. So now the pressures from the industrial nations that are having a bigger impact on climate change will affect Africa first in a way that is unprecedented compared to the Western world.
But what about the fact that, yes, it is true that it is the least polluted when you look at it scientifically, but that in other aspects, when you look at the issue of governance, you look at issue of corruption, you are talking about something that is probably greater than pollution here.
Governance and corruption will have their day. almost every other day. But if you're looking at governance and corruption in relation to climate change, then maybe yes. Because what we need to do as Africans, I know there is something called...
Are there no funding for...
Yes, I was actually going to talk about that. I think the 2015 Paris Agreement committed developed nations to help bridge that gap by committing, I think, up to $100 million.
I think Africa is probably expected to contribute like a billion.
They are to give us $100 million, yes, to help African countries in their push towards being more climate resilient.
They have given the money to African governments.
Now, that's a very good question. Some of the money might have come.
And where is that money?
Your guess is as good as mine. But it comes in the people who give it. The problem is the people who give it and the ones who receive it, I think there needs to be a more smarter mechanism of how it is received and when it is received and what it does.
You were talking about the need for accountability here.
Accountability, yes. But also, if you give me the money, or if you give African governments the money, or give it to them to do certain things that will actually help African governments.
Mm.
You don't want to give them money to go and do, I don't know, greenhouse gas emission campaigns or whatever it is. Let it be relevant. Let it support climate smart agriculture. Let it support renewable energy projects. Let it support things that get down to the common man and move upwards.
What is it that the African governments are not doing, in your view, that they need to do and they must do if, in fact, they have at least to give a sense that they are in the business of serving their people?
I think for me it's not so much about what they are probably not doing. I believe in solutions to climate change, the big polluters who are now dangling something towards African countries to be able to help them make a difference do not really involve African countries that much in the discussion for solutions. And I said that much, not entirely. There was talk in COP25 in Spain that African governments, African negotiators, were left out of the most important negotiations that would later impact on them. So I think Africa needs to be given the opportunity to sit down and chart out its way forward on its own.
Are you
create saying, accountability measures, yes.
Are you saying that those types of meetings, when they take place and make decisions that affect Africa, there are no Africans sitting around that table?
I have been told. I didn't attend these high-level meetings, but I've been told, and I think it's on record somewhere, even on the World Wide Web, on the Internet, that in some of these meetings, which we believe should be crucial to the Africans, they are left out of some of the discussions, which is invariably wrong. And that, for me, is something that I think, if I'm discussing Africa, an Africa Climate Week, for instance, the agenda should be for Africa.
Mm.
It should be one that speaks to Africa, because the solutions we are trying to find, even if they fit into the bigger jigsaw, are supposed to initially start from Africa. If we can adhere to that, both as the people who are helping Africa to grow and also the Africans who are standing their ground to ensure that that happens, then at least we'll start to move one or two, three steps positively forward.
But what about someone who might say that perhaps what is really needed is much more of government transparency?
Government transparency, I think, in so many other aspects, might fall in. In this case, especially in climate change, I have not seen cases of either money or heard of them across the African, and I read a little bit. I haven't heard of them of either climate financing having been given certain governments and those governments having misused that climate finance. At least at that level of climate finance, that is not yet heard of.
What about the issue of combating locusts?
The issue of combating locusts. Locusts were a new phenomenon in this respect. I mean, everybody was hearing of locusts in that magnitude that they have been in. I last knew about locusts when I read about them in Science.
As a matter of fact, even when you talk about this type of locusts invading, you know, places and what have you, it's probably was last seen so many years ago.
Yes.
Perhaps now a couple of decades.
That is why even our so-called experts and the press and all these people who are always out there to make sure they are acting like prefects of government.
Mm-hmm.
Are you spending right? Have you done this right? Even with the issue of locusts, they were slightly silent because nobody seemed to clearly understand it. It was one rumor, they are coming, now they're in Yemen, now they have crossed, now they're in Kenya. Before Kenya has handled it, they're in Uganda. Almost like a myth, but in reality it happened. So,
but are governments prepared, or do they in fact have the capacity and the political will to defend their people?
I think they do, because in Uganda there's a Ministry for Disaster Preparedness, and I remember...
There's a Ministry for Disaster Preparedness, but when
like
you
that.
Look at the budget,
yes,
you begin to wonder.
I am not an expert on budgets.
You don't have to be an expert. It's a document that you can read.
The issue of it, I think I know that there was a certain amount of money that was given to go and help rid Uganda of locusts. And for a while, the excitement of locusts died down. Whether the budgets worked, I think they probably did. To what extent, the accountability is for other people. For us, it is trying to see that do we rid ourselves of these locusts and protect crop yields, the farmers, the common man in general. I think now that you've mentioned it, and it is imperative that governance should not only stop in the political realm, it should extend to climate change as well, to our mitigation efforts, to any financing that has come in. I think even the government, so the institutions that actually give money for climate change initiatives, whether it's climate smart financing, should actually be able to point out their deliverables and making sure that that money is utilized effectively for climate change initiatives before they can go ahead and give more across the board in Africa.
Look at the issue of corona, for example.
Yes.
You know as well as I do that a virus does not require a visa
yes.
to essentially find itself on the African continent.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, so far, there are some African countries which have been affected. You're talking about Nigeria, even though it is an Italian citizen. You're talking about Senegal,
yes.
even though it is a French citizen. You're talking about Egypt. You're talking about Tunisia. You're talking about Algeria.
Yes.
Is Uganda, for example, is it prepared to deal with such a situation? Does it, in fact, have the capacity? We're talking about like the medical care, health capacity.
I think for something like corona, which is uniquely different, everybody's claims at a certain point to have the capacity, oh, we are handling, we are in charge, we are on top of it, and you never know until crisis hits home. I will give a lot of credit to the Ugandan government so far because it has not yet crossed over into Uganda.
We don't know.
Well, to the best...
You know, it's possible that something could be there, but we probably don't know.
We will go by the facts, but the reason why I said I would give them credit is only one. I think a couple of days ago, there was a plane, a KLM plane, that was bringing a couple of delegates and people, I think, had attend an
EU business conference
forum
or something.
And and they were actually told to go back. Mm. They turned the plane back. Now, that for me was a boost of confidence. And you will give them the benefit of the doubt. I mean, that was one step forward. We have heard of countries where, I mean, the disease has hit, but you have not heard of countries saying plane was returned, plane was returned. Well, Uganda seemed to have been the first that returned the plane. So I guess they and I don't think it was hypothetical or they just guessed. They probably followed some formula. I don't even know what. That's not for me and their CDC teams. But at least we can only pray. I think for me, in terms of mentioning corona, we can only just keep praying to God that somewhere, somehow, it doesn't hit home. Because like you say, you will never know until you identify the first victim. Now, when you identify the first victim, you narrow down that circle to 14 days before. How many people did he meet? How many people did they meet? How many? It's just God for us all.
What about migration as a result of, climate change? People come under pressure. They need to go somewhere else, whether internally or even beyond the boundaries.
Now, those are really bad because at the end of the day, if they're not well checked, they could even have a bigger influence on the political discussions in different countries because climate change creates refugees. You've seen people coming from across the border, one for politics, but they can also come because of climate change. Darfur, it creates famine.
Climate change also causes, of course, as you know, conflicts.
Yes.
Conflicts can actually even turn out to be civil wars that last for a long time, so much that people will, first of all, become refugees in their own country.
Yes.
As someone, as described, they describe them as internally displaced people. But they can also go beyond the borders of their country and become refugees.
Yes.
Such as, for example, the millions of people that are refugees from the world's, you know, newest nation of South Sudan.
And that is why the sooner we arrest this climate change issue, the better it will be. Because now you can have, if people cross over as a result of climate change, and they become refugees, they will be jobless, be seated. They will come from different backgrounds and ethnic orientations.
And who is going to feed them?
Who is going to feed them? What are they going to do? Are they going to become vagabonds? Are they going to become thugs? So the crisis needs to be arrested now. So I cannot speak for governments. I cannot speak for refugees. I cannot speak for all those. I can only speak for the children. Because I know that is something within grasp. That is why if we can teach those children now to do the simple things that can protect the environment, at least that is something that we can do. Then the politicians and governments and the rest can worry about the others. So for us at Little Ones Go Green, our approach has been simple, whether through festivals, through marching, through tree planting, through education, let's gather them together. Using religion, using their schools, their age, everything, bring them together for a common cause, environmental patriotism. If we can have pockets of those across Africa, then we'll have a better united Africa, almost the one that the late Colonel Muammar Gaddafi was thinking about when he was thinking of having that united Africa.
The idea was, in fact, earlier, initially mooted by the Ghanaian Osagyefo,
yes,
Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, alongside others, but he was, of course, the man really that came up with Africa Must Unite.
Yes.
And he wrote a book to boot. Now, let me ask you a question. Ever since you founded little green hands.
Yes.
What have you learned?
I have learned, among other things, that one, the human mind is diverse, but stubborn as well. I've also learned that you're going to meet very many obstacles in trying to achieve a little dream. I have also gone ahead to learn that, irregardless of all of this, it is a noble thing, a noble cause, to stick to the process of teaching children ownership of the environment.
Mm.
I tell people every day that there was a very wise man who I met when I launched Little Green Hands. His name was Taban Yassin.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that...
From where?
He was from Yumbe.
Okay.
Yumbe in West Nile.
Yes.
Mm. He told me, what you have done is fantastic, because a child's mind is like wet cement. Every time you write on it, it becomes permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you involve children in anything and it sticks in there, then you know the future is assured. And when I look at life in general, I sit down and look at Lionel Messi, David Beckham, all these tennis superstars, the Williams sisters, and I realize that from a nascent age, they have been teaching them tennis, football, and all these other things. So since it has worked and produced superstars...
And they became superstars.
And they became superstars.
Mm.
If we can wake up and teach this to the children, then we'll have so many Wangari Maathais across the board, across Africa. And that will be a beautiful start.
Joseph, what would you say that has been your single most important decision so far?
My single most important decision so far is deciding to work with children. Because children are a gift from God. They're unique. When you do work with adults, they will tell you, Shaka, the mic is not right, this is not, the cue wasn't on point, it was at 1 minute, 25 seconds. Work with children. It doesn't matter whether it was 1 second late, 1 second early, it is always perfect for them.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you give them, for as long as you have them, they will take on and keep forever. Over the years, we have planted in excess of 500,000 fruit trees across various districts and countries, Uganda, Rwanda, a few in Kenya, and they are growing.
What about the single most regrettable decision?
The single most regrettable decision was to... I like that one. Okay, single most regrettable decision was to decide to spend a couple of years feeling low, but not practicing before I went on to plant trees.
I see.
Thank you.
Well, on that note, our guest today was Joseph Masembe. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.